This is episode 57 of OutlanderCast with Mary and Blake.
Now they'll see my grandsire sent his heir to fight. The Stuarts will credit Lovat with supporting King James, should they win.
They can't execute me for treason.
What about the neutrality agreement?
I trust old Colm McKenzie is right, and that'll protect me if the British should win.
What'll you say about your son fighting for the Jacobites?
He's his own man, that one you saw it yourself last night. Persuaded others to follow. I thank ye, White Lady. I couldn't have got it all without ye.
You didn't get Lallybroch.
Not yet. Hey, help!
Please, tell me I'm nothing like him, Sassenach.
I'm afraid I have seen a similarly devious turn of mind.
I might have to rethink our agreement not to lie to one another.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Starz. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome. We are no longer speaking French. Or singing French. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I've never, ever been so happy to see gray, rainy skies in my entire life.
No longer reeks of frogs.
In my 33... in my 33 years... I've never been so happy to see rain or gray sky, gray clouds, just overcast. I got to tell you, woof, man. I remember you said within the first five minutes, not even 5 minutes.
No, just like the opening. And then they were like, oh, here's a beautiful shot of Scotland. Oh, here's another beautiful shot. Like it was like with a different music beats.
Right.
They were just like, we know you guys missed it.
Right.
Here it is.
And we had that great line when... when Jamie's like, Paris was a bitter disappointment.
That was a really interesting line.
That was a really interesting line. I'm quite surprised by that because...
Do you like that I used the word interesting?
Yeah. I guess that says more about my outlandish theories than it does the actual line then. That doesn't make me feel any better about what I have to say.
No, it's when I just have nothing to say because I can't say it.
I would say it feels to me... almost like a bit of self-awareness from the writers and them knowing that what they gave us in Paris, well, at least most of it, just wasn't what Outlander is. I mean, it looked beautiful, looked great, looked like costumes, set design, amazing. But you can only throw so much lipstick on a pig. Like, I think I've said that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean, like, you know, the entirety of Paris was a pig. Of course it wasn't. Faith was my most favorite episode yet of Outlander, and that was in Paris. Oddly enough.
We're back. You're back.
And it was good to take a step back a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think that works out well for us.
Well, we're back. We're ready. We're excited. And we are actually recording on the day we wanted to record because the plague of the Larson family is over. So we greatly thank those of you who have been patient. But we're back. We're back in action. Before we talk about this week's episode, we have an announcement.
Well, the first one is the listener feedback for Faith will be recorded, and it will probably be recorded maybe even tomorrow and still put up as we had talked about on Facebook. If you guys don't follow us on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, please do so, because that's really how we communicate any delays or whatever, we communicate it that way. We communicated on Facebook and Twitter that it will happen. And you guys are so important to our experience of Outlander. And what we do here, we want to make sure that everything that you, all the time and the effort that you put into your responses for us, make it on air.
It's just my family, aside from myself, all had the stomach bug, and it went through every single person.
Yeah, I was bedridden for about 3 days.
Yeah, there was like a round two.
Yeah.
So literally the past week, it's been interesting.
But
so,
the big announcement, my love, what do you got?
The big announcement, we had talked about it last week, that we were nominated for 3 podcast awards. All right, so Outlander Cast was nominated in the television and film category, but Ooh. Also the big main chalupa. Is that what people say? The big chalupa. I don't know.
Is that the, like, big enchilada?
Enchilada. I like chalupas. Anyway.
Yes, that's the first one in a while.
It is. So we were nominated for television and film. We were also nominated for the People's Choice Award.
The big chalupa.
And so you guys know, we have another podcast called Parent Cast, which was also nominated in the Kids and Family.
Right. So if you get a chance to listen to it. If you have kids or family or whatever.
But voting is now taking place. It opened as of today, May 28th, 29th, the day that we're recording. Yep. The link is going to be in the show notes, but it's just podcastawards.com.
Yep.
And you go there and you'll see pretty much all these different categories that you can vote for. So as I said, we are in People's Choice. If you just do control left to find and you type in Outlander, it will pop up People's Choice Television and Film. And while you're there, if you want to click Parent Cast for Kids and Family, click submit, and you can actually vote every single day for the next 2 weeks. So please take the time to vote and spread the love. We're really, 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 really excited that we're even nominated for this.
We know you guys in the Outlander community are amazing. And obviously, you know, the relationship that we have, us, Mary and I, with you guys is a special one. But we also know that, again, everybody that votes for Outlander, you guys take a lot of time on these polls and all of these different, like the Golden Globes and all this other stuff, and People's Choice Awards. You spend a lot of time voting for Outlander to help bring awareness. And we're hoping to tap into that because we are the only podcast that is representing Outlander, and we want to bring more awareness to this great show of ours, this great community that we have all, Mary and myself, but also you guys especially, that we have all created together. That's what's most important. And helping win the podcast awards is one giant step in that great direction.
Yes. So once again, podcastawards.com. I'm going to be letting people know about this on all social media, but please, please, please take the time to vote. Vote daily, vote often. Thanks so much.
My love, what do we got for the GBG of this episode?
All right, my good is Jenny. I'm so excited that we have Jenny back. Mm-hmm. I freaking love Jenny. I feel like Jenny is my spirit animal. I love how she and Jamie talk and fight, and just like brothers and siblings, brothers and sisters do.
It's like a lot like your brother and you. It really is.
It is. It's like, oh my God, I hate you. You're so different than me. They don't use the word hate, but and I don't use the word hate either. But you know, really, really strong personalities, and yet we can make up in 5 minutes, especially if they're helping with each other's kid. And just the entire time at Lolly Brock.
Yep.
I loved it. I freaking love potatoes. I've been craving potatoes now all day. I just want to go to Boston Market and get their pre-made mashed potatoes because I don't have time to boil and mash and do all that. I've got 2 kids on board. I'm just too much stuff. So that was my good, was Jenny and all of Lolly Brock. And then my bad was the sex scene.
Really?
Or should I say the lack of sex?
Really? I am totally surprised by this.
Well, we haven't really been able to have Claire and Jamie connect frequently. We had that amazing, amazing sex scene when they finally did reconnect in the blue light and the big pregnant belly. And I was just really, I mean, I didn't need a lot, but it was just really awkward where I liked how he picked her up. I liked how she said, let's go to bed. And he lays around the bed. And then there was nothing. It just was like this weird shot of Jamie that went into black nothingness. So I just didn't like that.
Okay. I can see the black nothingness.
Yeah, that's what
issue.
That's what I'm getting at.
I liked his silhouette. I liked how he was lit. I thought that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
But
it just went to nothing. That's what I mean. Like it was a great kiss, hop on Jamie scene, mm-hmm. but just I didn't.
Do you know what I was secretly hoping for?
Tell me.
I kind of wanted him to have this line from the wedding when he was like, to bed or to sleep?
Me too.
I kind of wanted that to happen
me
at that
too.
Point. And I was like, oh, that was a missed opportunity.
I would love that to be like their little inside joke thing. Exactly. And if he could have just whispered that back to her and have her giggle, then I would have been fine with the way this ended.
Right. Sure. Sure. But, because that's the character yeah. part of it. Okay. What do you
have?
And
then my great yep. is the old, but yet new opening.
Right. Right. It feels a lot more like Outlander.
Well, we've got... It's back to being in English, so we know what they're saying. We know what Rhea Yarbrough's singing. It's a little different. It's a little bit more war. It's a little bit more, hey, the Scots are going to be having some battle. Yep. So it's definitely a different arrangement, but it is very familiar, and there's new shots in it.
Yep.
So I'm excited because, of course, in the beginning of the season, when we get the opening, you love to go scene by, you know, shot by shot, and what do we think this is going to be? And now you get to do it midway through this season.
Right.
I'm so looking forward to that blog post because a lot of it, we sort very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was pretty interesting. We'll talk about it a little bit, but how about you? What was your GBG?
My good, being the F out of France.
Mm-hmm.
I just, and you know, also conversely, being back in Scotland, I can't with France anymore. I think Jamie channeled me and probably most of the Outlander community when he said Paris was a bit of disappointment. I've already harped on it a lot, so I'm not going to go back. I'm not going to go forward with it, but I will say being back in Scotland, being like when we saw the establishing shots, it was great. But when I felt like, okay, Outlander is back. We are back in Scotland. We're back with the people. We're back where we should be in a story was when we saw Jenny, was when we saw her husband. There, everybody is kind of, you know, just they're mingling together. You already have a built-in history with these people. And what they're going through matters. Like the potato thing, when Claire said it back in season one, hey, plant potatoes. You're going to have to do that. And it's great that they actually listened. They followed through. And it made sense. There was an end result. And it's helping Lallybroch. It's helping the story altogether. But that familiarity of being back in Scotland and back with people that matter and that you know are going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It made me feel like everybody in France was a bunch of log carriers.
Oh, wait, except Louise wrote a letter. That was very sweet.
Yeah, that Louise did write a letter, which was nice. But it felt like all of France was a log carrier.
And log carrier, Blake is referring to in Lost, when like, you know, you had your main characters, but then you'd have these random people who you're like, I've never seen you before, but you're carrying logs to feed the fire. So that was literally your purpose.
So, that's I don't know.
Okay.
The bad. When Jamie was talking with Colm, I actually liked the conversation. I liked what they were talking about. But when he threw the alcohol into the fire.
That wasn't Colm.
Yes, it was.
Mm-mm.
Oh, that was, crap.
That was Lord Lovett.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Okay, whatever.
And that was for the dramatic play when he's like, my wife is a good witch.
Yes.
And he threw it. I loved it. I thought you liked it because you were like, what? Like, you kind of smiled, but it was Jamie
a smile
just being
like,
dramatic.
It was a smile because, like, I understood why he did it. It was just being dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was cheesy as hell. And that pun was not intended, by the way. I thought it was just cheesy and it didn't entirely work for me. Although the conversation with Lord Lovett, I apologize. It wasn't Colm. My bad.
You were just too enchanted by the fire.
I know.
You were like, it's some old guy.
The blazing fire. Yeah. The guy with the gray hair, whatever.
How about your great?
Great. Jamie with the baby.
Oh, be still my heart.
Jamie with the baby was the best part of this entire episode.
I agree.
The whole thing. And
I agree.
What's great was that it was just so quiet. It was just so still.
You didn't even need to know what he was saying.
And again, yeah, you didn't need to know.
No.
It didn't matter.
Oh my God, I'm touching the baby's hand.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. It was perfect. And we'll get into more of that conversation later on.
Awesome.
That was my great. Jamie with the baby.
All right. Here is time for the kilt rating.
All right. I think I'm going to give it first here. And, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of this episode, but for the very fact that I'm now back in Scotland and You could tell immediately that what we were watching mattered. There was a reason for it. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I'm going to give this episode 4.4 kilts.
Awesome.
I'm giving it 4.4. I was going to go 4.5.
Yeah.
But just for the very specific fact we're back, and because what we're going to see, you know, it's going to have an impact.
You know what? I'm right there with you. I know that there was a lot, like serious dislike for this episode.
Yep.
When we started to get things in, I'm going to go there. I'm giving it 4.8.
Whoa!
And you know why? It's because the freaking kilts are back, man. The kilt rating needs to be up just for the fact that we're back in Scotland. Just like you said, everything that happened today matters.
In some way or another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it was Lord Lovett or even the dreaded Leary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that mattered.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff with Colm mattered.
Yep.
The stuff with Jenny mattered. It all makes sense. We're not just spinning wheels like we were in France for most of it. Do you know what I mean?
I was happy to be back. I enjoyed the music. Bear has some really cool themes. Who was it?
Oh, the Fox's theme.
Yes.
Oh, it's like this. It's like a twangy almost kind of.
It's like when
violin.
You have that hick old uncle who like chews tobacco.
Yeah.
It's that kind of. It's got that kind of like, you know, the uncles that you're like, oh, we don't need to go see him, like. I don't really want to go hang. It's like that kind of a twangy thing. I agree. So that's why I'm giving it so high. As I said, I know and I can appreciate that people had mixed feelings about this week. For example, Lisa Marie 1009 on Instagram.
No, it's Twitter.
Oh, Twitter.
Yep.
Gave it 3. They just can't get an episode at Lallybroch right. It pushed through too much plot and not enough character development.
I would disagree with that a little bit. A little bit.
Debbie Griffith said 3.5 kilts, was disappointed with the changes in Claire seeing Leary again and what that probably means for future seasons. Not enough time was spent at Lallybroch and too much pretending to be La Dame Blanche.
Ooh, I would agree with that one.
And Knott's mom gives it 4, is it 4 kilts or 0.4 kilts?
No, I think that's 4 kilts.
Okay, good. I liked the new intro with the original music. Glad to be back at Lallybroch. However, very disappointed with the fade out in the bedroom scene. I hear ya. We needed to see them more, especially since the French king bed is still fresh in our minds. Mm. Loved the baby scene and liked Jamie's shorter hair as a TV series only person. I liked the return of Leary. It added just enough tension, and I have a feeling we might see her yet again.
And Knott's mom, I think I like this distinction because I feel like the huge disappointment is with Leary and the book readers.
I agree.
And the TV people are like, what's the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about this later, but yeah.
Kim Haynes wrote in that Kim gives it 5 kilts. I enjoyed the calm feeling of the episode, Jamie with the Baron, and Colm's reaction to Claire's dramatic performance. All right.
So, my love, are you ready to get into the rest of this discussion?
Let's jump on in.
Let's do it.
What does the fox say?
You know, I gotta tell you, this music now that we're finally back in Scotland, it actually feels apropos.
It does.
It feels like we know we're back. We know what we're doing. Well, guys, this episode was entitled The Fox's Lair, which I actually really liked that title.
Oh, good, because it came from Diana Gabaldon.
Did it really?
This is a title from one of her chapters.
Wow, I didn't know that. I really like it. I think it's a cool title. It's cool because it's referring to the man as obviously the fox. That's his nickname. That's Lord Lovett. But it's also treating him like an animal in a lot of ways. And what he represents, it's animalistic. It's I'm out for myself. I hunt to kill. You know, and kill or be killed. And this is my lair. And if you come into it, you better watch out. And I really like that feeling a lot. And I got that feeling from that guy.
Good. Loved that shot of the fox, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It was just sat on it, just patient, watching the fox, you know, turn its head around.
And then he kind of like looked at you and he was like, that's right. I'm shady. I'm a fox.
I'm a fox. You got a problem with that, bro? Written by Anne Kenny, who obviously, as you guys all know, she wrote The Way Out, The Wedding, Lally Brock, Useful Occupations and Deceptions. And she actually has one more episode.
Very excited.
For this season. So all of these episodes that she has written, The Way Out, Wedding, Lallybroch, Useful Occupations and Deceptions, okay, not bad, but most of them have been very good. Directed by Mike Barker, friend of the show. Mm-hmm. If you get a chance, we interviewed him, I'd say about episode 25-ish, and we talked about his other previous episodes, The Devil's Mark and Lallybroch. So please, if you haven't gotten a chance, go back and listen to a friend of the show, Mike Barker. And he block shot this episode with the next episode. So he has two for this season.
So glad he has.
I know. I really like his direction choices for the most part. I think he's a good director.
All right. Yep. So we are going to break down this episode by relationships. This was your idea.
Yeah, I kind of like this idea because, you know, there's a lot at play here. There's a lot of familial relationship. And if you aren't like a super Outland nerd, you're going to get confused with who's who, how they all relate to each other. Like, you know, you got Jamie calling, you know, his cousin, but it's not his cousin. Technically, it's his uncle and like all this stuff. It's like we got to get this straight. And I feel like the way that everybody relates to each other is through kind of these familial relationships. So I wanted to start with the old fox here, you know, Jamie's grandfather.
Yeah. You said you wanted to start. So
you're the host, my love. I just wrote it down.
I knew I was proud of you. You took like some really hosting initiative. So I was going to let you kind of hold the reins a little bit.
You have a straw that, you know, stirs the drink here.
How about this? Yep. You jump on in. I'm going to course correct if I need to.
No, I can't do that. I'm not in the A-hole chair. I'm in the B-hole chair.
Thanks. Wow. All right, so speaking of an a-hole.
Yeah.
That's a great word to describe the old fox.
See, this is why you're the host. I never would have made that connection.
I think it's because I'm drinking wine.
Where's my wine glass?
Exactly. That's why you're not as witty as me.
I got Gatorade.
That sucks.
Unbelievable.
So, this wonderful, wonderful, and by wonderful, I mean not wonderful, good old Grampy.
Yep. Are we supposed to get the picture that this is just... he's a bad dude? Like, he's just not a good person? Or is he just out for himself, do you think?
He's out for... oh, I think those go... that's like two in the same.
No. They're different.
I'm not a fan of this guy. He's disgusting. He talks about raping Claire and then having his entire clan rape Claire.
Yes.
And he's a jerk to his own family, to his own son, to his own grandson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this guy's just a jerk. He's an absolute selfish... just completely in love with himself. Isn't even nice to his own kid, like any of his kids.
Okay.
So, we're not supposed to like him. And I think that it's really interesting that Jamie, of course, hasn't told Claire about him and feels so embarrassed about having to say, you know, that he even slept with his maids and his kitchen help. And he just treats everyone poorly. He treats his seer poorly. He's just a jerk. So yes, Blake, you are not supposed to like him, and he is all about himself.
I like the distinction that we made here with Jamie about his lineage. This is another... this is not plot. I mean, it's kind of plot, but this is more character-based. We've now discovered, you know, as show watchers at least, that Jamie's father was a bastard. You know, he did. His mother was not recognized by...
if he was in Game of Thrones, his last name would have been Snow.
Yeah, it would have been Snow. It totally would have been Snow. I was going to say a Stark difference, but then I was like, you know, that's a little on the nose there.
I got you.
I won't. You Game of Thrones nerds out there, you'll get this. You'll get that joke. But it's good to see that there's a distinction here because we're learning more about Jamie and we're learning more about his insecurities, almost. and kind of probably why he really wants to emulate his father so that he could be his own man. It doesn't matter who your father is. It doesn't matter what your lineage is. It doesn't matter if your mother was a kitchen maid or whatever. You can be your own man. So you can almost see why he was so excited to step into his father's shoes at Lallybroch in the first season. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Because he could be his own man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you're learning more about the character of Jaime. You're learning more about the character of his Lord Lovett, all in a three or four word sentence. And it's great. It's great. You got so much out of that.
You did.
And I really, really, really liked that because it's a simple choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I really liked the interplay between Lord Lovett and Jaime. And then bringing Colm into this mix too, gave it a whole new level. And you had that level where it was like the relationship between Jaime and Lord Lovett, and then you have the relationship between Colm and Jaime, and you want to be cool with Colm, you want to be cool with that relationship between the two, but it's hard because you admire the relationship between Jaime and Colm, but Jaime has other needs that he has to fulfill, you know what I mean? So you're kind of rooting for Colm, but you're kind of not at the same time.
Yeah.
Good. Again, more good character stuff.
I agree. I loved all of the stuff with Colm. I really didn't. So even still between Simon Fraser, Lord Lovett, and Colm, I mean, look at him. He could care less about Colm. He's not friends with Mackenzie. So think about it. His son,
yep.
Brian, Jamie's dad.
Yes.
Ended up marrying Colm's sister. He didn't want that to happen. He even tried to kidnap Colm's sister.
Okay, see, now this is why I wanted to break this down by relationships, because there's a lot at play here
with
who is who and why they are. So
here he is, literally like drafting up a little peace agreement with this guy.
Yep.
Whose sister he was trying to kidnap and stop and disrespected even after she passed away.
Right. Tried to do it again, but it was too late because she already passed away.
So this guy is just an all-around jerk.
All right, so the way that it is, and Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, Lord Lovett decides, well, doesn't decide, he has a little fun with his kitchen maid,
mm-hmm.
and the kitchen maid gives birth to Jamie's father.
Yes, Brian. Okay?
Jamie's father, Brian, then ends up meeting Colm's sister.
Yes.
Gets married.
Like, secret, it was a big deal, they married for love, yes.
Have Jaime.
Yes.
Okay. So then Colm, who obviously played a huge role in season one,
mm-hmm.
who asked for Jaime's fealty, is Jaime's uncle.
Correct.
Okay. Because he was the brother of Jaime's mother.
Yes.
Okay. See, because I was getting confused, because I was like, I kept forgetting that the Mackenzies was on his mother's side.
Yes.
And because when they're talking about Lord Lovett and they're talking about him being a Fraser, and I'm like, wait, I thought that was Colm. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So this is the Mackenzies and the Frasers.
Okay.
And Lord Lovett likes to, you know, bring it up how upset he was with everyone and how obviously he hasn't even acknowledged Jaime. And he makes it very clear that he just wants Lallybroch.
Mm-hmm.
Why? That's none of your business, he pretty much says.
And I got to tell you, I really liked the pain with which Lord Lovett spoke about Brian a little bit. It lent a little credence to his relationship with Brian, and it gave you an inside look almost at what he felt when Brian chose Jamie's mother over him, and then he chose her legacy over him after that. And you could tell how disappointed he was. And you could tell that disappointment then kind of reigns on the son that we saw today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the last episode. You could tell how he kind of just treats him like dog shit almost. Because you're a disappointment. I wanted the other kid to kind of follow after me. And who the hell are you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, okay, so now let's talk about this, about the other son for Lord Levitt.
Okay, young Simon.
Young Simon. So, Jamie is calling young Simon...
his cousin.
His cousin. But he ain't his cousin.
Correct.
He's his uncle.
Correct. So, I don't know if this is a Scottish thing or if it's just an age thing, but on my Scottish side of the family, yeah. I do the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so I have some, like, I had some younger... uncles or young, I had a younger aunt,
yep.
But I called her my cousin because she was closer to my age. And my parents told me to call her my cousin.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you just do because it would just be really weird.
It would be weird.
And like young Simon is even younger than Jamie. He's not going to be like, Uncle Simon. No.
Yeah. No, that is kind of weird. I would agree.
And there must have been, I mean, this happened frequently. Think about it. This guy, the old fox is Jamie's grandfather, and yet he was still popping out kids after Jamie was born.
Although Jamie did say he doubted the fact that he wasn't even sure if old Simon, the old fox.
That was a nice dig.
I liked that a lot.
Yeah. I liked that. You know, Maybe my grandma slept around with some other people.
Yeah, you don't know. And then for some reason, he then ended up backing up the fact that, clearly he was the grandfather and that's that.
So young Simon.
All right. Well, so yeah, young Simon. What do you got for me on young Simon? For me, my impression of him is that he's kind of a dingleberry, almost like Bonnie Prince Charlie.
Oh, God. I would not... I wouldn't say he's like the Bonnie Prince.
No. Like, I'm sure he's a good guy. Like, I'm sure the Bonnie Prince is a good guy. But he's just a dingleberry. Like, he doesn't got it. You know what I mean? Okay. There's no bear in him. There's no, like, you know, oomph to this kid. He just kind of exists. What do you think? Am I right about that? Or am I wrong? Or am I going to get an interesting here?
No, I just really don't like the Bonnie Prince. Uh-huh. I don't just call him a dingleberry. I just really do not like him.
Okay.
Whereas young Simon, I think, is very, very, very young.
Okay.
Very young and very immature.
Yes, I would agree. Because he's so easily manipulated, this poor kid. And you could tell that his father's been putting him down forever, and he's got zero self-esteem. And finally, when a girl starts to talk to him, what does he do? He starts citing poetry with his hand up. Like, dude, you ain't Shakespeare. Aww. You're not in a play. Calm down.
He tries.
Calm down. You're fine.
He tries. That was a really cute...
Such a little nerd boy.
His hair was very distracting.
What was that?
The poor kid, you know, he just needs... He needs a girlfriend who teaches him how to condition. Like, look at Leary's hair.
He needs some hot oil treatment.
If he and Leary actually, you know, started dating, she'd be like, honey, I'm going to show you what to do.
Here's some VO5.
Just practice your poetry, and I'm just going to play with your hair.
Put your hand down, though. Put your hand down.
Look down my shirt and run away.
How about that? When she's like, I gave him a kick down the front of my shirt.
What the hell?
He ran away.
Leary, you're like that slutty girl in like pre-teenage camp.
Oh my God.
That just can't.
Yeah.
you know that girl.
Oh,
you know that girl
know
that
girl.
Like sits in the back of the bus.
It's the girl, like the first girl in the grade to have boobs. That's
yes.
What it is.
Yes, that was Leary.
She was the first girl her age to have boobs.
She was the first girl to have leg hair and boobs.
Oh, that's funny.
I love how she acted all like, I need to pretend to be wet. And we're like, Leary, we know that you know how to play slutty. Like, don't joke.
I know. Come on now.
Come sit next to me.
What is the big deal with Leary?
What do you mean, what's the big deal?
Everybody on Twitter, it was like the world exploded.
Well, this was not in the book.
Well, let me say this before we get into that, which is, as a non-book reader,
yeah,
I actually kind of liked it.
You liked seeing Leary.
I did.
Okay.
I liked seeing it because it made sense how she described it. She got beaten for her role. With it. Like, remember how Jamie saved her in season one from being beaten?
Yeah.
Okay, well, she didn't get saved this time. She got her ass handed to her. And then the mother, who is Mrs. Fitz, says, listen, you got to quit this. And you got to learn how to deal with yourself. And you got to get acceptance from God. And you got to get this straight with yourself and God. And the only way to do that is repentance and making it straight with Claire and Jamie and whatever. I really liked that. And it made sense to me. I'm not sure if it was the actress or whatever, but I actually believed her when she said, I just want to make it right. And I'll do whatever it takes to make it right. And it also makes sense that because this girl has now been shamed, because she has been beaten in public, Colm probably feels a little bit bad. Because Mrs. Fitz is a trusted person in his camp.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Fitz probably has a little bit more pull than most.
Oh, yeah.
And she said, hey, help her out. She's not going to get married to nobody anytime soon. Just give her a job and help out. And it makes sense that Colm would have her around and take her to places and make sure that he's taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. So whether or not, is it convenient for the plot? Yes, it is. It's totally convenient. But I like what it does. I like what it does to Claire. And I loved her interaction with Leary, because so much has happened since the witch trial. But you forget that a lot of this started with the witch trial. A lot of this started... That witch trial was a pivot point. That's the whole reason
that Claire told Jamie the truth.
Right. So it's good to get back to that. And it's good that Claire, even though it's been in the back burner lately, it's good to see her saying, oh my God, I thought so many times about what I was going to do to you. I was going to dance on your ashes. I loved how vindictive Claire was.
Really?
I loved it. I thought it was great. Loved it. I loved it because it's real. It's real of Claire to say, I effing hate you.
See, I could have used a voiceover then.
No, see, I wanted that direct interaction.
Okay.
I wanted that.
I mean, Claire did
feeling.
Slap her. You're right. Claire has no problem holding back from Leary.
I'm glad that she slapped her in season one. Fantastic. Loved it.
Yeah.
But I wanted Claire to just verbally dress her down. And she did. She did. And Leary, leg hair got it. And she deserved it. And I wanted Claire to give it to her. Badly.
Okay.
But I was disappointed by Leghair at the end, because as much as they gave her something, they finally gave Leghair something to do, which was other than just fawn over Jamie and get Claire in trouble. They said, I want to redeem myself here. I want to do something that's worthy of everyone's time.
Who do you think is idea is this? Do you really trust her?
Leghair?
Yeah.
Hell no.
Okay,
because
she did some creepy stuff.
Well,
that
let me finish.
Okay, please.
Let me finish the end. Sorry, I don't want to say let me finish because I don't want to get in trouble.
I know, you get in trouble with that. I'm glad people called you on that. That is rude.
You know what? I'm not... continue. Continue.
Nope.
Continue.
I'm done. I'm just going to sip my wine.
Can't wait to get a bad review on iTunes because of that. Awesome. That really wasn't meant to be mean, guys.
I'm joking.
I'm talking to the listeners now. Oh. Ultimately, what they did was everything that they had accomplished, the writers had accomplished with Leary, with Leghair, at the end, when she tried to redeem herself, and Jamie goes to say thank you, and I don't understand why, but thank you. That's a good moment for those two. And then, as he walks away, and she says, I'll get your love. And I'm like, what are we doing? Why did you devalue everything that we just saw with Leghair? Why? That one little sentence at the end devalues everything that you saw.
Even the sniffing of the shirt?
Yes. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm not saying I get that, but I can at least accept that.
No, that's freaking creepy, okay? That's like a fetish person.
Yeah.
You haven't seen this guy in so long. Here you are doing his... You know that she was like... she's just disgusting. She's washing his like shirt. She's probably washing everything.
Listen, all of us have done something creepy when you're thinking that you're alone. I'm not saying you go and smell somebody's panties or whatever, but you've done something where if somebody saw you, they'd be like, dude, what are you doing?
No, she wasn't alone. She was in the freaking like.
Well, she probably thought
area.
That nobody was paying attention.
I don't trust this. No, she's just crazy. She's like one of those weird foot fetish people that's all like, oh, hi, Mary. You're in my band camp. Please send me pictures of your feet. Because that happened in real life. Okay? So I'm scarred. And Leary reminds me of that guy from band camp.
Whoa.
True story.
Time out.
He offered me money for photos of my feet. And I thought about it because I was poor, but I didn't.
Who was this jabroni?
I don't even remember his name.
Oh, my God. That.
Homie don't play that.
Right? Nope. But that's how I feel about Leary. Once I saw her sniff, I was like, oh, you're like the band camp guy. And then she did that creepy little thing at the end.
Yeah, in your love.
In your love.
She's like, yes, good.
She totally like went home and drew pictures of Jamie's feet. That's totally what happened. She like sniffed his
foot sniffer.
Sniffed his socks. Okay, that's how I feel about Leary. That's how I feel. What I was thinking when Claire was talking to Leary when she was having that whole... See, I didn't feel like that was Claire. Here's Claire who just like seriously knows how to contain her emotions.
Oh, okay? I disagree with that.
No. Maybe not with Jamie. Maybe not...
Especially not with Leary. You saw what she said in the witch trials.
She needed to in the witch trials.
I know, but Claire has had... as much as we don't want to admit this, she's had this thing with leg hair where she just cannot contain herself. She can't.
Well, I'm just thinking back to how well contained Claire just was last episode in the Star Chamber, okay? Lying, figuring out this like, oh, I'm going to pretend to do poison. No, but this is Claire. Claire knows how to play the game. And I just feel like, I don't know, I just... Leary is a lot younger than Claire, and there was a part of me that said, Claire, seriously? Because then she tied it with a nice bow at the end. Oh, but I'm not going to do any of that. Because at first I thought, oh, hi, I'm a book reader. What the hell is Leary doing here? All right, maybe Claire's just going to take another page out of Game of Thrones and just throw Leary over the edge. That's what I pictured. I was like, oh, this is just like what happened in Game of Thrones.
I didn't think that was going to happen.
It wasn't going to happen, but I was looking for whatever Diana Gabaldon was saying was going to jump the shark. Totally jump the shark. If Claire just picked her up and threw her over the balcony, that would totally jump the shark moment.
Yeah. I would agree.
I really did. I was waiting. I was like, ooh, Claire's getting ramped up. Maybe she's just going to push her over. Here we go.
Can we get into that conversation right now? The whole jump the shark thing. And for those of the listeners that don't understand, let's go over this. Diana Gabaldon, obviously the author of the Outlander series, made a comment, a couple of weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
Saying that there was a moment in episode 208, the one we're talking about right now, where the show jumps the shark. Now, if you don't understand the term jump the shark, that means when a show kind of like goes off the rails and it's no longer believable because there's this one moment when everything changes and it's so unbelievable that it ruins the rest of the show. And it actually comes from Happy Days when Fonzie is water skiing and literally jumps over a shark as a trick. And ever since then, because after that, it kind of ruined the rest of the series. And ever since then, that thing has been known as jumping the shark. So it's a bad term. It's a horrible term for anybody to say. And here's the author of your series, a person who's a consultant on your show, who has written an episode of this season that's coming up, and she's saying the show jumped the shark?
Well, that's why I thought Claire was going to throw over the edge.
I know, but...
Because that would have jumped the shark.
Listen, I know there's a lot of Gabaldonites out there. There's a lot of people who are in the Church of Diana that she can't do anything wrong. I'm telling you, this was not a good thing. You can't...
No, yeah.
Even if it was said in jest, that's not a good thing for your show.
Okay, well...
I mean, do you at least understand where I'm coming from?
Because it has a negative connotation, and you're talking about a show that has now brought even more fans to your book series, and who are making the dream of many people to see this book come to screen.
Right.
I agree. It's not a good idea to talk negatively, especially before it's even come out. But I don't think, in general, if you're just asking me if I think it jumped the shark, no.
Is the Leary thing you think that she was referring to about jumping the shark?
I don't even know.
I don't know either.
Because I honest to God, was sitting there saying, Claire's getting pissed. Claire's going to throw her over the edge.
Yep.
This is totally not going to, what, this is really weird. I don't know what's going on. None of this happened. And then
had she done something like that, okay, I can... That would have been completely, I wouldn't say completely out of character, but it would have been, that would have been hard to accept. But that didn't happen. And in fact, as a show watcher, the interactions, they made sense.
They did.
And it was good to see Claire back in that mode of like kind of almost being protective of Jamie, but like in a girl kind of way.
But then she kind of got, she was able to manipulate Leary.
Right.
To then have Leary manipulate young Simon.
Right. And here we go again with this whole thing of history and changing history. And is Claire making these bad moral choices again, like she did in previous episodes? Like she was potentially ruining the relationship between Alex Randall and Mary Hawkins. Mm-hmm. And now here she is. She's pushing leg hair on to young Simon.
Well, the seer did say that sometimes things can be changed. So who knows? Who knows? And that's the whole thing. That's right. What Jamie's going for. I'm doing a transition because I'm down with Leary.
No, I get it. And actually, I was going to follow that up with, do you think, now obviously you've read the books, so it's hard for you to answer this question, but at least in terms of the show, do you think the show is trying to tell you you can change history?
I think that Ron Moore is trying to tell us that you can change history, yes. But that doesn't mean that the history that Claire came from was, like, I think that you can change the course of history, mm-hmm. but I don't know if that means that the history that Claire came from could be changed, could be different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so you're saying the end result is the end result, but the end result is because Claire went back there.
I feel like that is what Ron is showing us right now.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
That there is potential for some change.
Here's
and that you don't know. And Jamie even said that.
Yep.
Jamie even said, if you hadn't have been here, Louise probably wouldn't have had this baby. Mm-hmm. If you hadn't have been here, a plague of smallpox would have broken out. So, yes, we didn't stop the Jacobite Rebellion. Bonnie Prince is still coming. He's still picking up steam. And now we have to completely change our stance. But had we not been in France, many lives would have been lost. Right. That unborn child and a whole bunch of people. So, and then the seer said this too. Well, yeah, I was able to warn this guy and his kid didn't go out in a boat and didn't drown and die.
Right.
So I think that Ron Moore and his team are trying to tell us that some small things, if you change your courses, can be changed.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think you're right. I think history is changed because I think events happen and events change because Claire is there and ultimately end up with the way they end up being when in Claire's future timeline. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably how it goes. Here's another question for you. Because we already know that Culloden is going to happen, mm-hmm. and based on the conversation we just had, the fact that the end result, no matter what, is still the end result, do you think it takes away from the story we're watching? Because we already know that Culloden is a failure. Like, did they show their cards too much in the beginning of the season when Claire went back and she said, Did we win Culloden? Did we win Culloden? And the guy obviously says, no, we lost. Or the English won. Did the show do itself a disservice by showing that? Do you think?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because everything we're watching now, yeah, I mean, I enjoy watching it, but I already know the outcome.
Yeah, you're right. Because, yeah. Yeah, we know that. But I don't know. I mean, it's sad. We're watching Jamie. I actually don't agree with that, because as I watched this episode, I watched Jamie change his stance and say, maybe we can change the future, Claire. We did already change some things right now, and maybe we just need to go full force, gather the troops. Maybe we can honestly do this.
But
he goes against Colm, and Colm comes, and I said it while we watched it. I said, God, Colm is being such a good leader. He knows. He knows this isn't a wise choice to join the Jacobite cause. He would honestly love to, you know, keep Scotland and be free, but he knows that it is a losing battle, and he is trying everything, and he's being very upfront with Jamie, saying, buddy, this isn't you. Like, you think things through. You don't act like this.
Right.
I need you to see that there is this is not the right choice right now. It's just not good for us. And
did you like his reasoning too? Like, I loved this juxtaposition when he's saying, when Jamie and Claire are saying, listen, we can change the future. We can do all of this. Yet Colm's reasoning for not joining the Jacobite rebellion was because of history that's already happened.
Yes.
I loved that comparison, because he knows we've had two other rebellions here. Mm-hmm. They've both failed, and they both failed because we didn't have any outside help.
It reminded me, I don't know when Tyrion from Game of Thrones said this, but he said something like, you can learn a lot about how to lead just by reading history. Mm-hmm. You know, things just happen and happen again. So that reminded me. And because we know Culloden has failed, mm-hmm. because we know Culloden is doomed, we know that. There is no question in our minds that they are going to win this battle.
Right.
Sitting here today, or, you know, watching this episode, I sat there and I'm saying, okay, maybe Jamie will listen to Colm. Like, I'm on Team Colm right now. Come on, Jamie. Like, it was painful to watch, because we love Jamie so much right now, and he's being the leader that we've wanted him to be.
Yep.
He's at home. He's confident. He's strong. He's gearing up his troops. He's really like making love to his wife. He's so on point right now, and yet he is so wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with it, because I'm so concerned for Jamie, and that's what we need. We need to care. You say it all the time. We need to care about these characters. We need to love them. We need to be worried for them. So I liked it, because the person who I love is making a really wrong choice, and we know it's wrong. It's not, maybe that's not such a good idea. No, it's wrong. It's wrong, Jamie.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying makes complete sense. I think if you were going to argue against me about the whole, should we care about what's happening because we already know the outcome, another argument would be, again, it's not about the outcome necessarily. It's about how they get there and why Claire goes back to the stones and why Claire goes back to the future. Something happens with Jamie. We already know it. And we see Jamie making these choices. We see Jamie pushing certain things in certain directions, making moves in certain directions, because he has changed his mind. He realizes, and the reason why he's even doing all of this is because he gets the letter in the mail at the beginning of the episode when they're in Lallybroch, and he's shown that his signature has been forged on this document from the Bonnie Prince.
Freaking Bonnie Prince. See, I hate him.
And it's been forged, and it's saying that he supports the Bonnie Prince. He's the rightful heir and the rightful family in the rightful line of kings. And not only that, but now because of this letter, it goes out to the world. Jamie is now back on the shit list with the crown of England. Like, another good thing that actually came out of France was that he was granted a pardon, and the king said, I'll make sure I arrange something with my cousin over here in England so that, you know, all of his prior crimes or whatever are now forgiven.
Yeah, you could actually go home.
You can go home and enjoy yourself, live your life.
Jamie's now screwed either way.
Now he's screwed again.
Mm-hmm.
So the reasoning Jamie starts to fight is saying, listen, even if I go, and even if you and I leave, Claire, what are we going to do? We're going to gather my family up? Yeah, she's like, yeah, we'll take Jenny. We'll take her husband. We'll take everybody. And then he's like, yeah, but we can take all my cousins. We're going to take everybody. We can't
do
that.
You know what? If Claire hadn't spent so much gosh down money on her whole outfits in France, they could have totally afforded to take everyone, because Jared is loaded.
Right.
Jared is loaded. And I was sitting there saying, Jamie, you can totally pack up everyone. You just need to call Jared.
And I got to tell you, and now that you're speaking about Jared too,
Do you like that I went there?
I know.
I'm like, her clothing alone could have paid for everyone to go to the new colonies.
Why don't you pay Magnus just
Ireland.
a couple bucks less, you know, will
Seriously.
You?
Seriously. Could have easily all gone to Ireland.
The fact about Jared and everything is that, and why I think Scotland is so good, and seeing, even though the discussions we're having here are pertaining to time travel and everything, but seeing Jamie and Claire back in Scotland makes sense to us, because it felt like to me, Jamie was, at least for the story, all of a sudden became a wine salesman.
Mm-hmm.
He all of a sudden became this great businessman. All of a sudden, he and Claire were like, it was like House of Cards. He was like Frank Underwood somehow. Like, he could get underneath people's skin and he would work things out and he had all these dealings and he had all these different plans. It didn't seem like Jamie to me. Didn't seem like Claire. All of a sudden, Claire is this lady and she runs a whole household and she wears all these dresses and hangs. And of course, they showed the differences between the two and how Jamie and Claire were upset and how it kind of drove them apart. But it's still, they succeeded a little too much, in my opinion. But then seeing Jamie back in the stables.
Oh, yes.
You know,
yes.
That felt good to be seen. Something as stupid as seeing him wear a kilt.
I know.
And it's seeing him walk in the mud with the boots as he's walking up to
Even
Colum.
Hearing the rain.
Yeah.
And hearing the wind, like just the elements of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
They did a great job picking up the audio, even amidst all of this different weather stuff. I mean, you're right. You're just talking about Jenny, and I wanted to touch upon your favorite scene, the scene with Jamie and the baby.
Yeah.
And not only was that beyond beautiful for so many reasons. I mean, here he is connecting with a new-ish baby.
Mm-hmm.
First off, Jenny, how did you get pregnant?
Well, there was a time jump.
Not enough.
Well, they it's got to be at least.
No, there wasn't enough time. Listen, Jenny literally got knocked up the day she took off her ice pack underwear. All you who've given birth vaginally know what I'm talking about, okay? Jenny was like, Ian's home for one day. Let's get pregnant, because that baby came out and...
Yeah,
because
they had the kid when they were at Lallybroch, right?
Yes!
Yeah, they had the kid when
they were
at Lallybroch.
Claire helped her give birth.
And that was 1743.
No, let's not talk dates, because they messed up all the dates in Outlander.
The timeline is a little convoluted. I will agree.
Basically, Jenny had a baby. Claire had a big bump, little bump, big bump, little bump. Jenny had a baby like a couple months ago.
That should be our new Outlander blog. Big bump, little bump.
And now here's this baby, which, you know. Look to be a good size and is actually sleeping for a little while with Jamie.
Yeah, so but the timeline is a little muddled.
Just forget it.
Doesn't matter. Just accept it.
Jamie with this baby.
Yep.
After last week, you know, we as a collective viewership lost faith. We lost faith the baby, and we mourned for Claire, and Jamie of course had that one line where he said, "I didn't even know if it was a boy or a girl."
Yeah.
Jamie didn't even get to see his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And Claire, obviously, it was incredibly devastating for her. But here's Jamie actually now getting to hold a baby for the first time, really, since his wife got pregnant. Yeah, and you know what I mean? Like, you know how when you held babies, you held your nieces before I got pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
It was one thing. But then after I got pregnant, you started to notice kids a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd see a baby and you'd be like, oh, man, this is what a baby feels like. All right. This is. And so there must have just been so much that we didn't even, as I said, we didn't even need to know what he was saying to the baby.
And it's great because Jenny was saying you can unload your heart on a baby and it doesn't matter. You know, you talk to them then the way you talk to them when they're not yet born.
And then for her to be saying this to Claire, because Jenny and Claire have a very unique, interesting relationship.
I love their relationship now.
It's really, really beautiful. And I don't know if you remember, but season one, she was saying stuff about how, oh, when you're pregnant one day, you'll get it. Like when, you know, when you go through this, you'll understand. But when she said, you know how, just like how we, like guys get to talk to the baby when they're outside, but just like we got to talk to the baby while they were on the inside, you know what I mean? And so she was able to like acknowledge Claire's entire pregnancy.
Right.
And the fact that, yes, you spoke with your baby. You had a relationship with your baby. Sometimes people really just skirt around the fact when people lose a baby. They just don't talk about it at all. And she did it in this beautiful way that another mother really can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without having to say, oh, I'm really sorry. Is this really hard for you right now to be seeing Jamie holding a baby? She was able to touch upon the love and the relationship that Claire had with Faith,
mm-hmm.
without even having to be so direct. And I thought that was awesome. Like, our hearts were melting watching Jamie hold this baby.
Yes, it was.
And then my heart melted again having this sisterly bond go between two very strong women.
Yep.
It was just so cool.
And then even also the thing too, when they were talking about, and he's just trying to get in my good graces and, mm-hmm. You know, this is a start and letting them sleep.
Oh my God, it's just like me and my brother.
I know, right? When your brother comes over and lets us sleep, it feels really good. I love him a lot then. And not only were we having that serious conversation about Faith and the baby and talking to you, but you also had time enough to explore a little bit of fun and a little bit of that relationship between the two and how they're really growing as a sister couple, and seeing those two even more so than someone like Louise or even Galus. No matter what, it just feels like Jenny has Claire's back. And to see Jenny go from, you know, given bitch face to Claire the second that she sees Claire for the first time, to now comforting her about her dead baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge arc, and it's an important arc, and I really appreciate what they've done with this character so far.
Mm-hmm.
Can
we add just one more family member?
Of course, yeah.
Fergus.
Oh, Fergus. Love Fergus. When that kid shows up on the goat,
it was a donkey.
Donkey, goat, whatever. Sorry.
Have you actually ever seen a goat?
I've seen a goat.
When? In real life?
Yeah, we went to the zoo last summer.
Did you actually look at it?
Yeah.
Blake, listen, how could you confuse a goat? Like, I can understand a donkey, okay, and a pony and a horse.
I had a brain fart. What do you want me to tell you?
A goat.
You want me to ring the bell again?
No, I'm just going to ask, can someone please make a Photoshop of Fergus riding a goat and send it to us? Because that might need to be this week's cover art.
Oh,
just
my
for you,
God.
Blake. Fergus riding a goat. If Fergus could actually ride a full-grown goat, he would be the king of men, because goats would not approve of that. Goat. I love you. Oh, my heart just melted when I saw Fergus riding in the goat. You really are not around animals. Blake, I really hope someone sends us a picture of Fergus on a goat.
My stomach hurt.
Don't get sick again.
Oh my God, I'm crying. I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
I don't, a goat.
I just got called out in front of 10,000 people who were listening to this.
So tell me more about Fergus and this goat.
Fergus and the goat.
Why did it melt your heart?
After he got done milking the goat, he rode him. I thought it was great because, I'm not going to let, that one's never going to go away.
No.
Okay. I liked it because it shows you, again, it's subtle things. It's subtle character moments that came out of Lally Brock. And this is why I kind of disagree with the listener who said that they don't have Lisa Marie on Twitter. She said that there's too much plot, not enough character development. No. I think there's plenty of character development in Lally Brock. Between Jenny and Claire and Jamie and the baby and now Fergus and seeing the potatoes.
I just wanted a whole episode there. This is the problem, yeah, with only having this many episodes. We love these people. We wanted more.
Well, I'm not going to complain about having 13 episodes because that is the common run for a show like this.
No, I know, but the problem is that we need time to breathe. We need time for Claire and Jamie to have more than one fake sex time. We need to have more time for Fergus. I mean, Fergus was just sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is one of the things I think we're going to talk about in the next episode, which we intended to talk about in listener feedback episode. Fergus was sexually assaulted, and now they're treating it like it didn't even happen. Like, there's nothing there. He just shows up on his goat, and
like,
and
I
that's
know,
it.
Like, for example, Fergus has nightmares as of last episode.
Yep.
And yet, here's Jamie and Claire, and they're like, we'll see you in 2 weeks, bro.
Later.
Bye. Yep. If you have a nightmare, you have to talk to Murtaugh, because that's who you want to talk to when you have a nightmare.
Talk to your commanding officer in Murtaugh, which is cute. This whole scene was cute.
It was awesome.
But when you start thinking about the repercussions of what happened in the previous episode, it's like, what are we doing here?
You're like, you can't be like, hey, Jenny, you and your bajillion kids, when you're not nursing your new baby.
You're getting busy with your husband.
For, you know. Oh, she probably is already pregnant.
She just took the pads off.
She, you know, can you please go take care of Fergus? Like, I know that they needed to leave him right now, but I feel so sad for this little boy.
You know what I would have liked? I would have liked them to leave him and Claire say, like, kind of like what you're getting at, please watch over him.
Yeah.
He's had a rough 6 months.
And that's what they did with Murtaugh, but...
And I'm glad, I'll say this, I'm glad that they had this big time jump because it allowed time...
There wasn't a big...
There was about a 6 month time jump. I read about it. There's like a 6 month ish whatever time jump, because if the body prince lands in Scotland, okay. If the body prince lands in Scotland, that is 1745, or late 44.
No, but see, this is the problem. Outlander has already messed up time. You just have to like imagine that time doesn't exist.
Okay, fine, whatever.
Time does not exist in this world.
Regardless of the exact timing, there was a time jump, and. And while I'm sure everybody wanted to see the healing process, which I was interested in, but you got to see the fruit of the process. Mm-hmm. And you got to see how everybody was relating with each other. You got to see Jamie and Claire, you know, back together again.
Yes.
And you know what? Ultimately, that's what's most important.
Yes.
You know, the road getting there is important, but... The result is what's most important. And you have to walk that fine line, because what are you going to show at Lallybroch for an entire hour? Really? Hmm. What are you going to show? You have to have something.
Yeah.
And there's got to be a beginning, middle, and end. It's got to make sense. And it's got to pivot. And I'm not sure if you could show something like that.
Okay.
So with that said, seeing the result is a good thing.
Okay.
And seeing them all interact, seeing Fergus ride in on his goat, and declare that he goes where Jamie goes, and
it was so great.
It was cute as hell. And then the whole Murtaugh thing, just phenomenal.
I just think I wanted to be there. I wanted to have a vacation. I wanted to have a long weekend. I wanted to have a holiday in Lallybroch. That would be lovely. Holiday in Lallybroch. It could be a movie.
But you got all. Holiday in Lallybroch.
Yeah, that's what I want. But instead, we had to deal with the witch, which is
Bing Crosby showing up.
Oh my God, I would sing about potatoes. It'd be like it'd be the Bubba Gump shrimp. You can boil it.
What was that again?
The Bubba Gump shrimp. Where he's like, you can boil it, you can do this, you can do that. And that's pretty much
shrimp sandwich, shrimp what it would scampi.
What it'd be like to the tune of White Christmas. I'm dreaming of a mashed potato, or maybe boiled or mushed with milk. You know, anyway. Okay, so yes, we needed, I would have loved more time. I appreciate there was a lot of plot we had to get to, including, as I just said, the witch is witch. Get it?
Wait, no, what?
Because there was like so many references to witches and Claire being a witch.
See, that's another thing too I wasn't quite sure about.
Yeah.
We already had the big act with Claire and the king. And now we got another big act with Claire and Lord Lovett. It's like we're jumping into the well here.
Claire just loves to work on her acting chops.
And I liked...
Claire deserves the Emmy, not Katrina. Claire, no.
I liked how she did... how... Jamie brought up the La Dame Blanche thing
right before he smashed and made the fire.
I like that conversation. It lent some seriousness to Claire. I loved when he's like, oh yeah, we'll get all my troops after you.
I just pictured him going back to the room being like, Claire, guess what I just did? I made the fire get really big. Isn't that so magical? Like, because she has all these potions. He was probably like so proud. Like, I threw alcohol in the fire.
And it burned.
Anyway, sorry.
And I liked how when you know, Lord Lovett's saying we're gonna rape your wife, and he's like, yeah, please try. She will eviscerate you.
What did you say about the apples during the first frost? Like, your balls will burst like an apple at the first frost.
I honestly forget.
Oh my god!
But that whole interaction was great. And then did you notice Claire's face when Jamie had told her about how he brought up the witch thing again? And she's like, oh.
It's pretty much the face I make when I'm like, have you done your job, the cat litter? And you're like, nope. And I'm like, again? Again? It's that wife eye roll, like, buddy.
Come on.
But it worked in her favor.
It did.
And obviously the old fox is a believer in this kind of thing. I like this. Once again, being back in Scotland, we got the fairy believer people. We've got the magic believer people where, you know, you can really play on
and
this.
And the thing, too, about it is that Claire and Jamie aren't supernatural. I mean, yes.
She's a time traveler.
Let me finish. Oh, no. See, I can't say that. Oh, continue. Continue before I get in trouble again.
It's okay.
So, yes, Claire is Claire is a time traveler. Yes, she is. And that is, it's not supernatural, but it is a sci-fi element. But she manipulates. She's not a witch. She's not La Dame Blanche, but she has no problem manipulating people to think that she is La Dame Blanche. And again, it's this moral thing. Is Claire doing the right thing? Would the rebellion happen if she just pretended to not be La Dame Blanche? Because ultimately, as old Simon, the Lord Lovett says, I couldn't have done this without you, Claire. I could not have split my allegiance between the British and the Jacobites and gotten everything unless you had told me about this secret thing that she ended up hearing from his seer.
Yep.
God knows who Maesri is, or the seer, whatever she is seeing, it wouldn't have happened because it didn't give her plan with Leary helped give young Simon the confidence. The whole thing shows up with her telling about the executioner. And then now the young Simon shows up and stops the knife, and it gives him the excuse. It gives him everything. What if Claire just hadn't done anything?
Claire should have had a one-on-one appointment with the seer and said, excuse me, can you please give me a little guidance?
Another thing about the seer, too, is just because she said there's a shadow of an axe, he is standing in front of, Lord Lovett is standing in front of the fireplace, and the guy is wearing, his face is covered in black. She didn't mention anything about an executioner. She didn't say anything about him being killed for treason. Nothing. It's just someone with an axe whose his face is covered in black. That could be anything. So that what they're doing is like, it's kind of like Star Wars. A prophecy misinterpreted, it could possibly be. And that's what I feel like is going to happen. That, see, wow, I like that. That's an early Lynch theory. That whole vision is totally misinterpreted.
Hmm.
Totally misinterpreted. That's my opinion. But that is that. That's all I got for that. Is that it? What?
I love you.
Do you have anything else?
I think that's enough for today, and we're going to attack some more in the next episode.
I think so, because I think we're already running long. Yeah, we already are running long. Why don't we get into the listener, GBG? What do you say, kid?
All right.
Let's do it. All right, Angela Hickey on Facebook says, The Good, I really love the new credit sequence and music now that we are back in Scotland. Not to mention the beautiful camera work and natural scenic beauty of Scotland. We have missed you. The bad was Jesus Roosevelt Christ. Number one, Colum coming with leg hair and none of his own men, by the way, to powwow with one of his absolute enemies. Someone who tried to have his sister kidnapped, backstab his clan in the previous rising, and tried to swindle his land. And what world is Colum hobbling in with a kitchen maid alone into an enemy territory to confer with his enemy to make a decision regarding the future and fate of his own clan? They did this as a reason for Leghair to be there, who shouldn't be there either, hence the rabbit hole. Number two, the entire ridiculousness of Leghair's story and the interactions with Claire and negative impact and complications it will cause for characters in the future. And three, the absolute ludicrous idea that Jaime would ever consider signing over Lallybroch to this man who betrayed his father, tried to kidnap his mother, and just planned to try to whore out Claire to his men. Never, ever, ever would Jaime do that. And four, the mealy-mouthed characterization of young Simon. Number five, Claire enlisting Leghair to bargain for Jaime's forgiveness for things he shouldn't know. It was a hot mess of bad characterizations that bummed me out for my beloved characters when I saw it. And great was Lallybroch. So short, but loved every moment. It's great to get back to the heart of the Jaime and Claire relationship. Not to sound pervy, but would have loved a real old-fashioned Jaime and Claire sex scene there, which has been quite lacking in this season. Thought we were getting one, but no such luck. Beautiful scene with baby Kate, Jaime, Jenny. Love that we got the potatoes in, but was so short. So many great Lallybroch moments had to be cut. If we had more episodes, I would have loved an entire episode of this beautiful time of healing, joy, and life at Lallybroch. Amen. I agree. I wanted more of Lallybroch. We could have gotten more. And maybe you could have cut out some of the politics. Maybe you could have cut out some of Leary. Yes. Although I do kind of buy the idea that Jaime would have signed over Lallybroch. Because now Jaime is committed. He's got to bring something to the Bonnie Prince. And he himself has said, I'm committed to winning this now. And the best way to win it is to get more men, is to get this clan. And if you have no other choice other than to sell or give Lallybroch over, then listen, that's what you got to do. I mean, do you understand where I'm coming from, my love? Do you see my reasoning? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think so, too. On Instagram, Addy Hemendel said the good was Leghair and how they combined her into the story. Wow. There we go. I like that. The bad was the Claire show, in quotations, when she acted like a witch that's seeing things. It was bad enough last episode. No need to use that trick again. And I would agree with you. And the great was the family bliss in Lallybroch between Jaime and Claire and everybody else. It was especially nice to watch Claire and Jenny together. I love seeing the power of female friendship. And on Twitter, Diane Thibodeau, and I put this one in for one specific reason. Diane Thibodeau said, the good was Jaime and the baby. It was so sad for him. And then this is what I put it in for. The bad was young Simon. He looks like such a doofus. First of all, I just love that. Secondly, I haven't heard someone say doofus in a long time.
That's a good word.
So that's why I put it in there. And the great was the old Fox. And speaking of great, it is now time for the Kendra Editor-in-Chief Thought of the Week.
Hey, Mary and Blake, it's Kendra. Despite all of the gnashing of teeth in the fandom after this episode, I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. It finally felt like Outlander again. Early on in this episode, Jaime confides to Claire, Paris was bitter disappointment. And in general, I think it was for me. We got some incredible performances and some memorable moments, but it just didn't feel like Outlander. That's something to consider when we look at the strength of Season 1A. It was so strong and gave us such a powerful sense of authenticity. Even the duplicitous characters felt more honest in their duplicity, if that makes any sense. This isn't strictly a show issue. The Paris section in the book didn't feel much like Outlander either. But we're back, and despite all this talk about jumping the shark, a complete misnomer in its context here, we are well and truly home and in familiar territory. There's such an earthiness to the relationships that we get, particularly between Jamie and Jenny, and God bless Laura Donnelly for taking a character I just could not relate to on the page and making her approachable without compromising Jenny's strength. We also get the continued growth of Claire's bond with Jenny. My favorite scene in this episode was Jenny and Claire overlooking Jamie and the baby. Trust Anne Kenny to give us dialogue like this. Jamie is pouring out his heart to his niece, and while doing so, gives us a list of family names. And we focus in on his words in a very purposeful and distinct way, not unlike the way a good director of photography will play with depth of focus to either hide or reveal a person's face. The editing here is masterful. We focus in just as Jamie whispers the word Katrina to the wee lass, and no matter what you think of the actors and their personal lives, this editing choice was as beautiful as it was purposeful. It may not mean much in the context of our particular story, but because of the deeply personal manner in which many in the fandom view the actors, hearing Katrina's name whispered so tenderly as he strokes the baby's forehead, well, it about did me in. The reason for this, I think, is that we are finally back in a place we all feel, as longtime fans of the books, at home. And therefore, the incantation of her name is like summoning the face of an old friend. No matter the reason, I cried again both times I watched it. I enjoyed the episode the first time I watched it, which was by myself. I just watched it again with my husband and enjoyed it even more because of his enjoyment of it. I have the unique advantage, as does Mary, of getting to vicariously experience the story for the first time by seeing my husband's reaction to it. And no matter what you say about the nature of adaptation, the litmus test of a good show is someone who goes in completely blind and unspoiled and can appreciate and understand the story without having to rely on the elaborate knowledge base of about 10,000 pages of previously published text. If I have to do a ton of explaining and filling in gaps, I know a particular episode has failed in some way. Leary's appearance in this episode didn't bother me a bit, at least no more so than Leary has always bothered the hell out of me in general. Diana's labeling of this twist as a shark jump moment is beyond silly. I agree with the show's creators and that this was a necessary fix to a sizable season 3 issue where the suspension of disbelief goes flying out the window. I really enjoyed Nell Hudson in her scenes and particularly loved Claire's complete and utter verbal evisceration of her. I didn't really understand why they were playing with the timeline in regards to Colum's introduction, or reintroduction, I should say, in visiting Lord Lavat. But upon the second viewing, I understand we're dealing simply with real time constraints in this 13-episode season. We're quickly running out of time, and there's a lot more story to tell. I'm giving this episode 4.5 kilts simply because I'm a bit disappointed we didn't get more time at Lullybrock. Scotland itself sold this episode. Oh, and the new title sequence is just sublime, as well as the deeper understanding that we get of old characters who have become our friends. Also, Jenny's speech about the way fathers speak to their infant children was just so beautifully scripted, it broke my heart. I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of the season now that we're finally fully back, although I do hope next week isn't one long Eye of the Tiger training montage. I'm particularly curious to hear Blake's thoughts on the episode as a show watcher only, given the huge fandom drama that erupted. Glad everyone is feeling better at the Larson household, and I will talk to you guys next week. Thank you so much. Salut.
All right, Kendra, thank you so much. As always, you bring it every single week, and we love everything that you have to say. And my love, I always bring it with this next segment.
It's time for the Outlandish Theory of the Week.
The Outlandish Theory of the Week is brought to you by Aykroyd's Scottish Bakery. For over 60 years, Aykroyd's Scottish Bakery has been making traditional Scottish baked goods with contemporary flair. Throughout the second season, we will offer a special, not a what? Not a what? a mediocre menu of Outlander-inspired delicacies. What? We've been doing this every week. Okay. It's fine.
I don't say mediocre.
No, I do. I figured that you would, you know, get it. It's okay. Leave me hanging. You know, just dead air. It's no problem.
I'm looking at baked goods.
You're looking at baked goods. Thank you. They inspire delicacies. They ship throughout the U.S., so check out everything they have at AykroydsBakery.com for more info. And while you're there, tell them that Mary and I sent you and use the coupon code Outlander to get 5% off of your purchase. Anything you want, whether it be meat pies or as for whatever thing Mary's looking at while she's ignoring me as I'm doing this, you... You can get it sent directly to your front door from Aykroyd's, and they're really good. They are excellent.
They are.
So, you ready for my theory, Milo?
I am so ready for your theory.
All right. So there was a conspicuous absence this episode, and it was brought up a little bit, but the absence was Dougal. Dougal was absent, and he was absent because Colm says, "I think it's best that we split ways here." And part of me thinks the reason for this is because Dougal was the one who gave up the information to have Claire and Galus arrested. And part of me thinks that's why he didn't show up to rescue them. And part of me thinks that's why Colm kicked him out. And because Colm had nothing to do with it. I believe him when he says that. I believe him when he says he beat Leary. I believe him when he was upset by this. He was so upset by it that things changed. And I feel like he found out that Dougal gave up the information. And Dougal made this big play about how he loved Galus. But remember, he also freaked out when his wife died, too. So it part of me feels like... Google. That was our original shipping name.
It was.
Dougal liked Galus when she was the side piece. And then all of a sudden she was, you know, having a baby. And then his wife died and things got complicated. Maybe he just didn't want her around anymore.
I'm just going to give you this, Blake.
What's that?
Interesting.
Oh, okay. Well.
That's enough of that.
Yeah, that's enough of that.
Mock me.
Please hang up and try again.
What are your final thoughts?
Final thoughts. I am so glad to be out of France. I really am. And
I'm going to miss those clothes, though.
I especially
loved seeing what Claire was in. Please. Every single week, you're like, ooh, I like Claire's dress.
I do like most of her dresses, yes. Especially that one, the blue and the purple. And
oh, the cloak?
The cloak. I love that. Love that. This episode was good. And it was good to take a step back after what we saw in Faith. This is the one that sets up the rest of the season. It introduces you back to Scotland. It introduces you back to the characters that you love. It's almost like that moment when you have to stop and like clap for yourself. Like, okay, we finally got through all the crap. Let's breathe, and now we can step forward after this. And that's what this episode was.
I want a little bit more moment to breathe. If the Bonnie Prince could have just held his horses a little while longer, that would have been nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate that we only have 13 episodes.
So we got to get the thing moving here. Are you ready to close out the show, my love?
Always.
All right, let's do it.
This is usually the part where we get to tell you to find us on all social media, but you guys know the drill. You know where to find us. Everything is on OutlanderCast.com, but the website that we really need your help with right now is PodcastAwards.com. Don't forget to vote for Outlander Cast in both the television film and the Big Chalupa, the People's Choice Awards.
Was it made out of goat meat?
And if you're there and you feel so inclined to vote for Parent Cast in the Kids and Family, that is one of our other podcasts. So
vote,
every
please.
Day you can until I think June 12th. So this is like literally an only 2-week thing. If you want to put a little reminder on your phone, do it before, you know, do it whenever you want. Do it while you wake up. Do it if you take a tinkle. Do it. on the train to work.
You should sing the Tinkle song.
I'll do that some other day.
We have a special Tinkle song.
You know what? If we win one of these awards, I'll sing the Tinkle.
You know what you're gonna do? Like I promised on the Facebook Live event. If we win, we're gonna rent a space.
No, you're crazy. No,
we're gonna rent a space. Whoa! And then you're gonna sing the Tinkle song in front of everybody at the space.
Well, until then.
Can't wait to hear this.
Guys.
Please.
Thank you
guys,
so much.
Guys, vote. Vote early and often so we get to hear
Podcast
the Tinkle song.
Awards.
Podcastawards.com. Again, it's not
Spread
just for
word.
Us. It's about spreading the word for Outlander.
You
so please represent.
You can do it once a day.
Once a day.
And spread the word with your friends. All right. Well, ladies and gents, until next time, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And you've been listening to Outlander Cast.
Not a goat.
Someone needs to Facebook. Like, send us that picture. If I was talented, I'd do it.
Me too. Goat's not allowed. All right, guys. Thank you.